This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Darren Adam.
Good morning, it's 4 minutes past one. Welcome to Thursday, the 21st of January. It's LBC, leading Britain's conversation. I'm Darren Adam with you till 4 o'clock this morning with continuing coverage of and reaction to the inauguration of the United States of America's 46th President, Joe Biden, and Vice President Kamala Harris. If you want to react to anything that you hear, you can, of course, give us a call, send a text, send a tweet, send an email throughout the course of the show. Over the next 3 hours, we will be hearing, indeed, from the new president and from the new vice president. Celebrating America is a show hosted by Tom Hanks that will be broadcast right across the USA from 1:30 this morning. It has a star-studded lineup of celebrities and performers and, of course, the two people right at the very heart of this day, I guess, the new president and the new vice president as well. So speech is coming, we understand, over the course of the next couple of hours from Joe Biden and from Kamala Harris. Let's quickly reflect on yesterday, a significant day for so many reasons, and we'll be covering and looking at all of those between now and 4 o'clock this morning. But the moment when Joe Biden was sworn in as the 46th president of the United States of America.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear.
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
Office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. Thank President. You.
An inauguration like no other for obvious reasons, but also an inauguration at least unlike one for 152 years, in that it was not attended by the defeated predecessor of the new president. Let's go to LBC's Washington correspondent, Simon Marks, who has been watching a very, very busy day, and the day is far from over, Simon, which we'll get to. Good morning. Well, it finally arrived, and Joe Biden was inaugurated, and even that wasn't a given for the last couple of months, was it? Or didn't feel
well,
like
I think that's. I actually think that's a really important point to make, Darren. We have witnessed the peaceful transfer of power here in time-honored fashion, but that was not a given as recently as 2 weeks ago tonight, because 2 weeks ago tonight we were all reeling from the invasion, the insurrection on Capitol Hill by conspiracy theory-believing armed supporters of President Donald Trump that cost five lives. And I think it's really important to underscore the symbolism of the decision to go ahead and hold that inauguration on the steps of the U.S. Congressional building. As some voices here were saying, it's too dangerous, the security situation is too brittle, they should be moving it into an indoor, secure location. Joe Biden, at one point in the speech that he made, made the point that, you know, the Capitol building and America's democracy had been shaken to their very foundations 2 weeks ago. And I don't think that that is in any way overstating it. As you pointed out, Donald Trump skipped town early this morning, flew off to Mar-a-Lago with Melania Trump, the former First Lady. It was notable that when they left the White House and walked across the lawn to Marine One for that final flight to Andrews Air Force Base, she never looked back at the building. He stopped at the top of the stairs, turned around and waved. She never once glanced back at the building. They, of course, now are in Florida facing a very, very uncertain future. And Joe Biden, it's been one of those days when you just realize how quickly power in a practical fashion ebbs away from someone when they've lost an election and they leave the White House for the last time, and how rapidly power hews in very practical, concrete terms. You know, the nuclear football, but also yes. Joe Biden sitting there in the Oval Office wearing his face mask, signing 17 executive orders, proclamations, and memoranda. You know, it's not even a new day here, and it's already a new day.
And we said, of course, didn't we, that that when that transfer of power took place, it would happen automatically, regardless of whether Donald Trump decided to graciously or otherwise concede defeat. It was a matter of constitutional law that at a minute past midday yesterday, he would cease to be president and Mike Pence would cease to be vice president. But nonetheless, when you see it happening, even in these extraordinary circumstances, it's really quite moving and quite staggering, isn't it?
Yeah, and there were two moments today when it was really hammered home for me that Donald Trump wasn't there. And one of them came after the inauguration. The first thing that Kamala Harris and Joe Biden did after the inauguration was clamber into their respective limousines and head to Arlington National Cemetery to honor the fallen, the tomb of the unknown soldier. And they were flanked at that very moving ceremony by the Obamas, the Bushes, and the Clintons. The Carters weren't there because they're in their mid-90s and it was deemed not wise for them to travel to Washington in the winter in the middle of COVID. And as that ceremony unfolded, you realized with a real bang the point to which Donald Trump and Melania Trump have chosen to remove themselves from the institutional family furniture of America's government and its governing traditions. I thought it was more jarring, in a sense, that they weren't at Arlington Cemetery to honor the tomb of the unknown soldier than they weren't at the inauguration. And then the other moment that is definitely going to stick with me is when Vice President Mike Pence and Karen Pence left the inauguration. They were the symbols of the Trump administration at the inauguration, although by this point, Vice President Mike Pence had completely broken with President Trump, given that 2 weeks ago the president unleashed a violent mob on Capitol Hill, vowing to find Mike Pence and hang him. When Karen and Mike Pence left the congressional building, they were escorted down the steps by Kamala Harris, now the vice president, and her husband Doug Emhoff, the new second gentleman in the United States, which is going to take some getting used to saying. And they engaged in conversation for 4 or 5 minutes, a deep conversation. It seemed to be extremely good-natured. There was laughter, but there was deep conversation. And it was, you know, you had to remember that it was only about 4 days ago, maybe three days ago, that Mike Pence finally picked up the phone and congratulated Kamala Harris on her win. And as he got into that limousine, the former vice president, and headed off, you just thought the stories he's got to tell about what he's witnessed inside the White House, what he went through 2 weeks ago. It'd be absolutely fascinating to wonder, is he going to write a memoir? Is he ever going to give a tell-all interview? I think there would be intense interest in understanding how he decided to stand by Donald Trump's side through excess after excess for 4 years. And I would love to know what the four of them were talking about on the steps of the Capitol today.
Well, just listening to you there, Simon, when, again, we hear phrases like tried to hunt down the vice president and hang him. Just one sort of fragment of so many words that have been spoken, all of which make your eyes pop out of your head at the abnormality of what we have been through. But then you talk about the speed with which power transfers from Trump to Biden. Do you think things will normalize as quickly as power has been transferred?
I don't see how they can. I mean, this city is still a fortress tonight, and there's no indication that the FBI or the law enforcement agencies here think that it's safe. You know, okay, Joe Biden's sworn in, now 20,000 National Guard troops can just melt away, leaving this city and others all over the country targets for those supporters of Donald Trump. And there are millions of them all over the country tonight. Much as Democrats are joyous, and it was like a pressure gauge being released today and celebrating openly the arrival of Joe Biden and, from their perspective, some sense of normalcy. And from everyone's perspective, I think, you know, a return to more predictability and stability in the Oval Office. Equally, there are millions of Americans out there that view Joe Biden as an illegitimate president. They've been persuaded by Donald Trump entirely falsely that the election was stolen. And some of those supporters, according to the FBI, still pose a real threat to the security of the country, which is why Joe Biden, in those parts of his speech where he spoke about the threat of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism, where he was really, I think, leveling with the American public.
Yes.
It was a speech, it was a reckoning, that speech. It was not in any sense covering things up. And telling everybody that the State of the Union is strong and America is the indispensable beacon of light shining on the hill again. It was a very clear warts and all presentation that said to people in the United States, we've got some real problems that we now need to overcome. And one of them is getting away from an era of, as Joe Biden put it, manipulated facts. We've got to defend truth and we've got to defeat lies, he said to the American people. And that's not going to occur overnight. You have got millions of people out there trafficking in conspiracy theories that President Donald Trump has brought into the mainstream of the American political conversation. And it's going to be the work of Joe Biden's presidency, with a very uncertain outcome, trying to push all that back.
It's about deprogramming, isn't it, for so many people? And some people who carry and advance these conspiracy theories are in Congress. Marjorie Taylor Greene,
yes.
As has now been reported, we know in 2018 that she claimed on Facebook, quote, I am told that Nancy Pelosi tells Hillary Clinton several times a month that we need another school shooting in order to persuade the public to want strict gun control. She is now effectively a member of the American Parliament. She was voted in November. So it's not just the crazy incels in their mum's basements, is it? It is, in some cases, people who occupy a place at the heart of American democracy and have been placed there by American democracy.
Yeah, and they're not going to go away, which is why Donald Trump's suggestion, reported by the Wall Street Journal today, that he's going to set up his own political party, the Patriot Party, were he to move forward with that, he would be able to count for the first time as a third-party figure in American political life. He would be able to count on support in the U.S. Congress, in the House of Representatives, and possibly even in the United States Senate. I mean, let's see what happens at his impeachment trial, because were he to be convicted at that trial, still a very high bar, he would then be banned from ever seeking public office again. But I've got to tell you, I live literally four blocks from Comet Pizza, which is the home of the Pizzagate conspiracy theory, where conspiracy theorists for a couple of years now, three or four years now, have argued that Hillary Clinton used to engage in just ludicrous claims about pedophilia in the basement that doesn't exist of a pizza restaurant here in Washington, D.C. Last night, for the first time in about 2 years, they had protesters back outside the pizza restaurant insisting that criminal acts were being committed inside. Why were they there?
Because in the basement that doesn't exist, yeah.
Yeah, in the basement that doesn't exist. They couldn't get to the Capitol building because the ring of steel was surrounding the central area of Washington, D.C. So they revived the golden oldie, the absolute specious nonsense about non-existent illegal activities in the non-existent basement of a pizza restaurant. So in this neighborhood last night, it was very apparent that we are not yet, as a country, that the country itself is not yet turning the corner fully.
Yeah, I mean, I'm smiling and laughing a little bit as you say that, but only because it doesn't sound any less ridiculous now than it did 3 or 4 years ago. Simon, I'm conscious as well of many things. Firstly, I'm going to let you go, but just briefly, I did say at the start of the show we wanted to look ahead to the Biden presidency, and it does begin with, I think, 15 executive orders, or 17 possibly?
17.
17 it is, forgive me. And many of those seek to undo what Trump did in over the course of the last 4 years. Which are the most significant ones, would you say?
Well, he's taken the country back into the Paris Climate Change Accords at the stroke of a pen. He's restored America's membership of the World Health Organization. He's overturned the travel ban that targeted predominantly countries with predominantly Muslim populations. And he signed an executive order mandating the wearing of face masks in federal buildings by federal employees all over the country. Each of those in its own way is designed to symbolize his priorities in terms of truth, transparency, equity, justice, a focus on climate change that no previous president, not Barack Obama before Donald Trump, placed on the climate change crisis. And of course, the relentless need to forge a national policy to respond to COVID-19. So I think in many of those actions, he's given a clear signal of what his priorities are. But at the end of the day, as I think we said on the program the other night, this is not an authoritarian country. It is a democracy. He's going to have to find ways of working with Congress. And that's going to be the real test of whether he can succeed. Can he persuade Democrats in the Senate always to back him? Because with 50-50 split there, he needs every single vote he can get. And is he going to be able to find a way of working with Mitch McConnell and the Republicans in the Senate in a bid to try and put the country back on the path of being a respected and safe, secure democracy? Those are massive questions tonight.
They are, and we'll have many opportunities to chew them over in the future. Simon, thank you very much for now. Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent.